Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Perfect. Bang on my chest if you think I'm perfect.
Go ahead, bang on it.
No heart?
You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
This is Patchwork Heart Ministries' Young Catholics Respond, brought to you by Breadbox Media. Now, here's your host, Bill Snyder.
Thanks, Adam, and welcome to the program. I am indeed Bill Snyder. It is a pleasure to have you with us, no matter how you're listening to Young Catholics Respond. Thank you for listening and welcome to the program. Today, my guest is Diana Mayo. She is the president and co-founder of the NOMI Network, which is an abolitionist network that works to ensure the complete end of human trafficking. And she is dedicated to doing this throughout her lifetime. She is a standout star in the abolitionist movement. She co-founded the NOMI Network as a nonprofit and creates economic opportunities for survivors and women at risk of human trafficking. Since its inception, Diana has played an instrumental role in making the NOMI Network the powerful international organization that it is today. She has gathered together the NOMI Network's board and advisory board, in addition to establishing strategic relationships with large corporations. So, Diana, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being here today to talk with me about this very difficult subject of human trafficking. It's certainly not a light topic to talk about.
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much, Bill, for having me and highlighting this very important issue.
Yeah, so I wanna understand how you got involved in making this your life's passion. Can you just tell our listeners that story?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was given the opportunity to spend 10 weeks in Cambodia in 2007 through a microfinance research fellowship, where I was charged with providing, surveying, and also interviewing microfinance clients with the purpose of improving this microfinance bank's loan products, as well as helping them assess their impact. And while I was there, I spent a lot of time in rural areas in Cambodia near the Thai border, where there are still landmines that are active. And in these remote villages where I would have to, with my colleagues, take a car and then a moped and then walk through during rainy season muck and leeches to get to some of these villages where the microfinance bank was distributing funds for small entrepreneurs that were starting, you know, that had local businesses. And so across the board, I discovered that even though there were receiving loans from this bank, sadly, they weren't using their money for their business, to grow their business, but they're using the money for emergencies and also to pay off loan sharks in their communities. So a lot of times loan sharks will use children as collateral or recruit coerce children to girls to work in brothels. And at this village near the Thai border, I met a single father with seven children. He had lost his wife to an illness that was, in fact, curable, but in the village, they didn't have access to medical care. And after we surveyed him, we asked him about 100 questions about his loan, about his assets, about his liabilities, about his children. He offered my male colleague, his youngest daughter, in his broken English, you like her, you take her, and proceeded to try to, you know, sell his daughter to my male colleague. And at that moment, I, you know, realized that he was operating out of desperation and not necessarily malicious intent, malicious intent that I often read about in stories and in articles about parents in some of these areas throughout Asia and Africa selling their children and profiting from it. So in his case, I really saw the desire to provide for his children and not be able to. So I had a real shift at that moment and a desire to take action and to help this family. But through that process of learning about what were the challenges in these communities, as well as the issue of human trafficking that I wasn't very aware of, aside from reading some articles in graduate school and a book called The Good News About Injustice from Gary Haugen. So that really helped me to be able to understand the issue and then came up with the idea of NOMI Network.
Fantastic. Yeah, the NOMI Network, you know, which was founded from April of 2013. How did that grow up? I mean, you have an impressive team. I mean, looking at the website, you have an impressive team. You know, internationally, you have one in the United States as well. So talk with us a little bit about the action of what the NOMI Network does on a day-to-day basis to prevent and actually, you know, educate and help people become aware of this incredibly incredibly disastrous thing. I mean, you know, as you were talking, you know, I'm listening and I'm like, you know, fathers selling children out of desperation because they've got loans. Like this is a huge wake-up call, I think, for a lot of young people and a lot of people in our culture today.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a wake-up call. And, you know, for me, I needed to experience it firsthand to commit to wanting to serve families like the one that I met in Cambodia. And over the years, meeting Nomi, the girl who was trafficked by her stepfather and for malicious intent, I met her when she was 8 years old in Cambodia the year after in 2008. And so for me, I was in my early 20s. I just did what I could. I gathered people from church, my friends who worked in consulting, in marketing, in finance, and this is in New York City, and just started gathering them to see what we could do and also share about some of the ideas that I had. And across the board, when I would present my experience and also data on this issue, passionate young people, especially from the church that I attended, were eager to participate and take action. So this was in 2009, and it wasn't until late 2012 that I actually quit my job in business consulting and started leading NOMI on a full-time paid basis. But during the years of volunteering, you know, you're right, we were able to really mobilize and activate a lot of passionate, dedicated individuals who had global experience, you know, traveling overseas on missions, seeing extreme poverty in South Africa. My co-founder herself is about 10 years my senior at the time, and was a buyer for Saks Fifth Avenue and senior planner for the company as well. And she had spent the summer before I met her in South Africa working with women living with HIV in a collective. So for us, NOMI's mission is plain and simple. It's to provide training and job opportunities for survivors and women at risk of human trafficking. And we do that through our fashion incubator and fashion school in Cambodia, working with about 40 plus anti-trafficking organizations, ministries, and nonprofits that have some holistic care, either rescue, rehabilitation, counseling. And we provide empowerment services and upskilling to women that want to be creative, want to design, and also produce products. And so the courses we offer there are very modular and also very fashion industry centric. So we were able to recruit talent from Patagonia, from Gap, from H&M to come and serve as guest lecturers at our fashion school. And our second program that's expanding rapidly in India, from initially when we launched in 2012 with the Department of State in Bihar, which is the poorest state of India, where there's systemic violence against women, corruption, lack of rule of law. Most people live without electricity or running water, and 90% of the women we serve there cannot even sign their name. So we developed a curriculum there that focuses on life skills, building the women's self-confidence, restoring their dignity, and then some basic technical skills that allows them to secure their first job or start a business that, in essence, can earn them a living wage and help them provide for their children. So now we've extended to two other states, Odisha and West Bengal, which is actually home of Calcutta, where Mother Teresa established her orphanage and organization. And so we work there, and we're expanding into other regions where we've mapped out trafficking hotspot areas where there are not just human trafficking, but also child marriage, bride burning, and just really poor social economic indicators for women that keep them in this vicious cycle of abuse. So I've been just really, really excited, especially in India, working there because of the global figures of 46 million people in slavery. Half of those people live in India. And so we're really committed to addressing this issue in India and then also in other parts of the world where there are these extreme norms that really keep women and girls oppressed.
Yeah, this is true women's rights that you are working on. This is true women's rights. The more and more I listen to you talk about this, I just think, man, this has to get out so incredibly far. And I know you've mobilized over 8.3 million people to combat modern day slavery, as you put it. But man, just what an amazing work you are doing, Diana. It is a I am so inspired listening to this, and I'm sure listeners listening to this episode right now are wondering, a few things, and we have just a few minutes before the break, so I want to just kind of quickly ask you two things. What can the average person do, and then are there any signs to, you know, that someone has been trafficked? I mean, I think this program this problem in our society is very widespread, but it doesn't come into the light very often. We're going to talk about that light, in the second half of the program with the Harvey Weinstein scandal. But I want to ask you just, are there any signs, and what can we do?
Yeah. In Asia and Africa, it's easy to see signs. It's easier to see when a 12-year-old girl is in a brothel and being paraded around. In the United States, it's a little bit more difficult. For me, I've become more sensitive. And so when I see, a girl that is disenfranchised or homeless or on the street being approached by men, in terms of homeless youth, the likelihood of them being approached by pimps is 100% likely. Immediately when they're on the street, within a day or two, they are recruited or approached by a pimp. So, for me, it's more of a greater, broader question of, really, really taking care of, as the Bible says, the least of these, and making sure that they are safe and secure. And some of the other signs, are people that their passports are taken away. If you talk to someone who perhaps is a, a nanny or a maid, and they don't speak English and their passports are taken away and they have to work hours, you know, long hours, 18 hours a day, and also are not able to leave until, you know, unless they're given permission. That's definitely a sign of labor trafficking. So just in terms of being a good neighbor and asking questions is the first step. The second is getting involved with organizations like NOMI. There's a list of action points that one can take, you know, ranging from birthday campaigns to sponsoring a woman through our 12-month program, through just buying a product, exercising consumer purchasing power, and, you know, telling brands that, you know, I would like to purchase products that empower women and not contribute to modern day slavery. So all of those details can be found on our website, which is nominetwork.org.
Awesome. Diana, I got to take that short break right now. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with you, especially about that this has come up into the public spotlight recently with the Harvey Weinstein scandal. So definitely want to thank you for being here, and we'll be right back after these messages here on Young Catholics Respond. I'm Bill Snyder.
Do you want to keep your finger on the pulse of Patchwork Heart Ministry? Follow our monthly blog, Written on Our Hearts. Simply go to patchworkheartministry.blogspot.com and click subscribe and follow the on-screen instructions. That's patchworkheartministry.blogspot.com, then click subscribe.
Judy Hare was a bankrupt, homeless, drug-addicted college dropout on the brink of divorce, but is now a seminary graduate and devoted wife and mother of four children. What happened? Find out in her autobiography, Shattered: How God Restored My Heart and Life. Her journey of faith has been called brutally honest, truly inspiring, profound, heartbreaking, and life-changing. Shattered is available now for only $15 on her website, judyhare.com, on amazon.com, or at your local Catholic bookstore. As Judy says, it is never too late to become the person you deserve and desire to be. So stop wishing for change and start doing something about it by reserving your copy of Shattered today.
The words spoken by Our Lady of Guadalupe to Juan Diego nearly 500 years ago are almost too good to be true. Asking that a temple be built at the site of her apparition, she promised that here I will give all my love, my compassion, my help, and my protection to all those who love me, cry to me, seek me, and who have confidence in me. Here I will listen to their weepings and alleviate all their sufferings, necessities, and misfortunes. My name is Alan Napleton, and I live in Dallas, Texas. I have visited her shrine in Mexico City dozens of times, bringing my own petitions, and have found Our Lady to be true to her word. Over the years, I have brought hundreds of pilgrims to this holy place without incidents, and have now founded Viva Guadalupe, a nonprofit that provides safe and inexpensive pilgrimages to Our Lady's shrine. If you would like to take our Blessed Mother up on her promise and learn more about how you can visit this special place of grace, please visit vivaguadalupe.org for more information.
Your heart is always beating, but you never have to think about it.
Welcome back to Young Catholics Respond. Once again, Bill Snyder.
Welcome back to Young Catholics Respond. Yes, I'm Bill Snyder. And on today's program, I am blessed to be joined by Diana Mayo. She is the co-founder and president of the NOMI Network, and she does amazing work, just incredible work, to help end human sex trafficking, human trafficking. It is a massive problem in the worldwide, but recently we have seen this whole Me Too movement come alive, and especially with disgraced media mogul Harvey Weinstein has brought into the light just how much coercion there is around sex in Hollywood and sex trafficking. And that is a shocking, shocking thing. Statistics estimate that 40.3 million people are trafficked globally. So obviously it's happening here in the United States. What has this done? What has this news done with the Weinstein scandal, the Me Too movement? What has it done to spotlight your efforts in helping end human sex trafficking?
Yeah, I feel like it's helped Americans understand that sex trafficking does not just happen in remote villages or in the brothels of Thailand or in India, but it happens in the United States as well, and it happens in different forms. So, you know, one of the key drivers of human trafficking is lack of opportunity and poverty. So there's corruption, lack of rule of law as well that drives this $150 billion industry. And so with the Harvey Weinstein case, although Noble, you know, was not born in rural India, there are attributes of this case that really kind of present and package itself as a human trafficking case. And so in particularly, you know, her being lured into a hotel with the false promise of a job or an opportunity, you know, it really kind of shows how human trafficking can be very complex, but at the same time, power, money, exploitation, and these are underlying causes and root causes of this industry.
Yeah, and so, you know, with young people, as you kind of talked about in the first half of the program as well, there's this lack of opportunity that young people have, and, you know, okay, especially if they're out, you know, homeless, searching for something, they're likely to be approached by somebody that can say, hey, use your body, and I will promise you this. And what happens, you know, there has to be a incredibly hard cycle for these women to break, because they get manipulated, they get used and abused, and then how do they take steps to get out of that? I mean, I know we can talk about the warning signs. I know we can do all that, but what are the steps to get out of that? And, you know, maybe there's somebody listening to this program. That's the amazing thing about media today. Maybe there's somebody listening to this on the radio or on a podcast that is in a situation that is unhealthy, and they've been taken advantage of. What are the steps? How do you get out of this?
Yeah, if, you know, immediately what comes to mind is for someone that is trafficked, you know, homeless youth or someone who was forced, kidnapped, there is a national human trafficking hotline, 888-373-7888. And people can even text Be Free if those cannot, you know, talk on the phone because they're being, you know, in essence, it literally being caged, they can text. So that's immediately. And there are organizations, we're international, but there are great organizations in the United States that serve women, provide them with safe shelter, provide them also with counseling and rehabilitation. But I think the most important process that's often not addressed is the identification process and helping getting women and girls out, because as an author, one of my favorite authors, Benjamin Skinner, puts it in A Crime So Monstrous, slaves do not raise their hands to be counted. So if one does not raise their hand to be counted, the average citizen walking through a train station, walking through an airport, is not necessarily looking for people that are held against their will and in slavery. So in terms of the average citizen, one can just be aware of the signs. And also in New York City, we have something that says, if you see something, say something. And as a citizen, I believe that if you do see something at an airport where people are transported or at a train station or bus station is very common. Low-cost transportation where pimps will often send women from place to place, state to state, city to city. So that's the first step that one can take, is to have that hotline on hand and to be ready to call it. And in certain cases, call law enforcement, because a hotline is a slower responder than law enforcement. In many police jurisdictions, they have departments dedicated to minors.
For sure. And so, you know, never hesitate to say something. If you see something, weird or whatever, you know, stand up. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that we can do, is stand up for other people and get into the, you know, stand into the breach. Especially men, you know, have to play a role in that. I maybe want to touch on that for just a few minutes. The role men play, good, honorable men in our society, especially with laws and with justice. You want to talk about that, and, you know, what men's role is in this, and in calling out maybe other men who are, using women in a way that is, you know, for self-gratification. I mean, is there a root cause there to this as well? That men are just, you know, some men out there are using women as, you know, objects. Is that what fuels this and keeps this going?
Yeah, there are so many reasons why. For men, have really intentionally sought out men to be on our advisory board, on our board, on our team, because especially in the area like India, where it's very patriarchal, where women are not permitted to leave their homes without asking their sons, their husbands, their fathers, and in some cases, yes, they're pimps, to leave their hut. Control and male dominance is a common thread in some of these developing countries, but also I would say it manifests in different forms in the U.S., through power, through the fact that many women are not in leadership, executive board positions. And so with that, you know, there comes all types of challenges for women to break through the glass ceiling. And in some cases, like the Harvey Weinstein case, it could lead to, you know, sexual exploitation and rape. So I would say that besides engaging men and reminding, men, there are so many great men who are mentors in my life, who are fathers, who really empower women and their daughters to step up, and who support women in the fight against human trafficking and for a more level playing field. I would say that is something that more men I see rising up to the plate, and that's really exciting. In terms of exploitation, there's just a lot of brokenness in our world. And for me, in India, Cambodia, hearing some of the stories of pimps, also hearing some of the stories of pedophiles, I know that they also need psychological help and spiritual, emotional healing and counseling. So, you know, we can definitely say that men are the problem, and it's easy to do that. But I think we also need to take a step back and look at the whys behind behavior, behind pattern, behind the fact that you can easily, you know, now with social media, now with the internet, click a website and have access to seeing, you know, literally women getting raped. So I think that as a society, we need to also look at what kind of tools and what norms are being established that is also perpetuating different forms of exploitation and violation against women.
Awesome. We got about a minute left, Diana, so I want to make sure we plug what your website is and what else you have going on. So I'll let you do that. Go ahead.
Yes. So our website is www.nomenetwork.org, and we have many ways to get involved. And our annual gala every year is in May 2019. And so excited to invite those that are interested to join. We also have events throughout the year. And I'm definitely available if there are any questions, and people on my team, please feel free to reach out to info@nominetwork.org. Thank you so much, Bill.
Oh, thank you, Diana. This was an absolute pleasure to have you on. Once again, nominetwork.org is the website. Thank you so much for being here. Really, really appreciate your time and your knowledge and your passion for getting this difficult topic out there in the world today.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Yes, you too. This has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond. Until next time, from all of us here at Patchwork Heart Ministry, I'm Bill Snyder. Keep beating to your Catholic heart.
This has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond. For more information about our program or to be a guest, visit patchworkheart.org, email info@patchworkheart.org, or call 424-704-3278. That's 424-704-3278.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.